So we're holding on page Ches in Shabbos, the last paragraph, Daf Beis Amud Aleph. The Gemara started talking about the dinim of Ner Chanukah, because it talks about the oils and the wicks that you can and can't use for Shabbos, and therefore it talks about the fact that you can use all of them for Ner Chanukah. There is, by the way, you know, there's a connection that's brought in various Maamar Chassidus between Chanukah and Purim, starting with the fact, of course, that they're both Yom Tov and Derabanan, so it is somewhat Hazman Grama. Actually, Anaf Yosef over here discusses a reason why it is that Purim, we have Mishka the Simcha, whereas Chanukah we don't, and then we know the explanation because Purim, our Gufim were in danger, whereas Chanukah the Neshamas were in danger. So in this connection, the Gemara brings the point that Ner Chanukah that's taller than 20, higher up than 20 amos is no good. So in this connection, Amar Rav Kahana, Dorosh Rav Nosson Baman Yumi Mishmei Rav Tachum, Mai Dichtir Ba Bol Reik Ein Boi Moim. What does the pasuk mean? It says by Yosef that the pit was empty, there was no water in it. Mimash Mashanem Ba Bol Reik. If it already says the pit was empty, any Adesh Ein Boi Moim, don't we automatically know there was no water in it? Elamat Tamad Boim Ein Boi Moim, Mayim Ein Boi, Avon Nechoshim Ba Krab Nyesh Boi, but there was snakes and scorpions in it. You have a famous Musadik of Oath on that if there's no water of Torah in a person, then inevitably there's going to be snakes and scorpions because there's always some, it's always going to be filled up with something. Discussion also. So why is Reuben telling them to throw him in the pit? So one answer, Balabatish, is he didn't know there were snakes and scorpions in it. And in fact, there's an explanation that is the connection with the previous piece, besides that they were both said by Rav Nosson Baman Yumi, Mishmei D'Rav Tanchum, the same way as the Ner Chanukah higher than 20 amos is possible, because you're not going to notice it, the same way the pit was deeper than 20 amos, and therefore they didn't notice the snakes and scorpions in it. There is also an interesting explanation, though, that says that actually Reuben may have known that there are snakes and scorpions in it. But he figured, on the other hand, it's one thing, though, I think that Ramban talks about this, it's one thing for the Eibishter to do a nest that involves that the snakes and scorpions shouldn't bite him. Fine, that's the kind of nest the Eibishter is likely to do. The kind of nest that would involve interfering with the brothers, the Bechira Chofshis, where they're ready to kill him, and the Eibishter should save him and then stop them from doing that, is a much less likely nest, kind of nest to happen, and therefore in that sense, Yosef is better off with the snakes and scorpions. Umar goes on to talk about Umar of Yehuda, more dinim of Ner Chanukah, Umar of Yehuda, Umar of Ashi or Asi, Umar Rav. Also, Lahartis Mo is connected to Ner Chanukah. You're not allowed to count out money in front of the Ner Chanukah. And there's various explanations of various opinions of Rishonim on that subject. Does that mean only that because it's a Dover Shochol, maybe a Dvar Mitzvah you would be allowed to do in front of the Ner Chanukah, maybe not even a Dvar Mitzvah, maybe the vote is that particularly when it comes to counting money where you have to hold it up close to the light, and that would be more of a Bizoyin of the Mitzvah than any other Dvar Chol. Anyway. So then Rabbi Yehuda says, when I told that over to Shmuel, we find that Rabbi Yehuda was at first the Talmud of Rav, and then after Rav passed away, Shmuel outlived Rav by 7 years. Then Rabbi Yehuda became Shmuel's Talmud. So when I told the statement over to Shmuel, Omali says, why shouldn't you be allowed to use it for counting money or whatever? Does the lights, the menorah have intrinsic kedusha in them that it should be also to use the light for anything else? Masked for Rabbi Yosef. So Rabbi Yosef answers this. So Rabbi Yosef asks that. What kind of a question is that? So what? When you shecht a wild animal or a bird, does the blood have kedusha? And yet, the Tanya, we learn in a braisa, the shofach the fisa, the one in the plus fisa, should spill out the blood when you shecht the animal or the bird and then cover it. It means the mashayish shofach yichasa. The same thing that he spilled the blood with is what he should cover with, namely with his hand or with a knife or whatever. The point is you shouldn't cover it by kicking dirt over it. Shaloyu mitzvah bezuyas olam. So the mitzvah shouldn't be, so you shouldn't treat the mitzvah with bezuyan. Hachanami, shaloyu mitzvah bezuyas olam. So you can say the same thing over here. No, fine. The light of the Neris Hanukkah in and of itself is not kedusha, but nevertheless, it's the light of a mitzvah, and the mitzvah you shouldn't treat with bezuyan. There's an explanation, Takas, of why did the Chachamim set it up that way? Why did the Chachamim make it? And we say, Haneris Alalu, Bein Manu Rishos LeShamish Behen. The reason is, because after all, what the Neiris Hanukkah are meant to commemorate the Neiris of the Mikdash. And that was inside the Heichal. Nobody's actually using it. So therefore, by the same token, the Chachamim set up that the Neiris Hanukkah, you shouldn't be using the light of them either. The Gemara goes on to talk in some detail about the question, can you light one of the neighbors of the menorah from another? So the Gemara talks about to use a match or a chip of wood or whatever to light from one and then use it to light the other. That for sure not, because the match itself doesn't have kedusha in it. But can you take one of the lamps of the menorah and use it to light the other one? So the Gemara gets into a whole discussion about it. So now the Gemara says Masiv Rav Sheshes. So Rav Sheshes says I have a contradiction. So you're telling me that you can't do that, but we say about the menorah, the pasuk describes the menorah with put the parochas ha'edus yarech, that he should set up the menorah outside the parochas ha'edus. Now, in the simple sense, it's called parochas ha'edus because it's the parochas which is in front of the edus, in front of the orin, which contains the laws. But Maharsha explains that the Gemara is bothered by the question. It's one thing if it said aroin ha'edus, fine, and that would mean the orin which contains the edus, but parochas ha'edus. Why is it called that? How is the parochas directly connected to the edus? So therefore, we doubt therefore that the word edus refers to the menorah itself. So we have to ask first of all, why is there a menorah anyway? Does Hashem need our light? Throughout the 40 years that Bnei Yisrael went in the desert, they went by Hashem's light. We don't need to provide our own light. Tosfos has some discussion about this, that another explanation, means does Aaron need the light of the menorah in the Mishkan to be able to see his way around? The Ananiah cupboard would actually not only give them light, but it would work as an X-ray, and you could actually see things that are inside other things. Tosfos brings from a medrash, from Brisa, the Melachos HaMishkan, and then Tertas Kohen, and whatever, that they could even see what was inside containers. An interesting thing in that regard, by the way, there's the Targum Yonason, or Targum Yerushalmi, or whatever it's called on the Torah, which is not from Yonason Ben Aziel, but anyway, it's a different Targum than the standard Targum Onkelos we're familiar with. So it mentions by the Porah Duma, this coming in Yonah Diyom, because it's coming Shabbos, it says there that the Koyan should check the Porah Duma to make sure it doesn't have any of the traits. Now, the question is, how do you do that? Most of the trefas are internal. How are you going to check for those before you shecht it? So the answer, one answer that's given, Taka, is based on that. In at least the first one that Elazar HaKoyan made in the Midbar, since they have the Anani HaKovet, could serve as an X-ray, or like an MRI, or whatever, and yes, they could see if there's any trefas on the animal. So Tosfos learns, the question is, does Aaron need the light such that there should need to be a menorah in the Heichal? And by the way, in a similar vein, it says about when the Kohen Gadol went into the Kodesh HaKadosh of Yom Kippur, the Yerushalmi brings that during the time of the first Beis Mikdash. Now there's no light in there. The light of the menorah is not going to reach through the parochas. In the time of the first Beis Mikdash, the Oren itself gave off enough light that the Kohen Gadol could clearly see what he's doing. In the time of the second Beis Mikdash, there's no Oren over there, so Taka, you'd have to kind of feel his way around, because all you have is the glow of the coal that he's carrying in, and there's Taka not much light there. So what's the purpose of the menorah? Ella, edus, the boy, or the mshashkin, shoda, be Israel. The purpose of the menorah was to be an edus, to be a testimony for everybody who's in the world that the shkina rests among the Jewish people. My edus, how exactly is the menorah an edus for that? Amarav, zu ner ma rabbi. Specifically, this is the ner ma rabbi. And it actually explains over here, you have two different opinions about how the menorah was placed, whether it was east to west or north to south. There's a long Rishima from the Rebbe, Rishima Samanura, that goes in great detail and then discusses these two opinions and the opinions about the other Kalim in the Beis Mikdash, why the different opinions, how each one is placed. There's a whole sugya about it in Menachos, that ever goes into great detail about what each of the possibilities represents in Avodah. Anyway, the point is, if you say the menorah was placed from east to west, so all of the then the Ner Ma'arovi is the second one from the end. You have your walk in from the east side of the Mishkan or the Heichal. Now the first, you see the first one, then you have the next one in from that is the Ner Ma'arovi, and it's called Ma'arovi because the first one that can be described as west of a different one. Because the first one is only east of all the other ones. The second one is west of the first one. If you say the menorah was tzof and vedarim, then all of them are equally east and west, then the Ner Ma'arovi is the middle one. Anyway, the Ner Ma'arovi was the edus, shenosin b'shem and kemidas chavarisehal. They put in just as much oil in it as all the other lamps, omi menahoyim madlik, v'ahoyim messiahim, and yet they would light all the other candles from the Ner Ma'arovi, and he would finish off with that. So Rashi gives a long explanation, in other words, that like this, they would do the Atavas HaNeiris of all the other lamps in the morning. And most of the Rishonim learn that they only lit the lamps of the menorah in the evening. But Rambam holds they lit them in the morning as well. But anyway, Rashi over here explains that they do their Tovas Haneiros, so like this, they did all the other ones in the morning, you say in Abaya have Masada every day, but they wouldn't do this one because it's still burning. So now eventually, what happens is, if he finds that it went out, because the case after Shimon HaTzadik passed away, then he would relight it from the Mizbeach HaOvah. But other than that, he finished cleaning out and lighting, he'd light all the other ones from this one. Then he would take out the wick from this one and light all the other ones, and then clean it out and put in fresh oil and a fresh wick and relight it. Tosfos discusses that it's not necessarily so. After all, if they took the wick out of the Ner Ma'arobi, then there's no Kedusha in it anymore anyway, so why is the Gemara even bringing it in as any proof about lighting one lamp from the other? The point the Gemara is getting at is, in other words, that the Menorah and the Menorah were fixed in place on the branches of the Menorah, so how would you light one from the other? If you can't light one from the other, then how would you be able to do it? And for that matter, even if you could, then still we're saying when we met Hoyamadik, they would light all the other ones from it. So the Gemara ends up answering the longer wick, so they can stretch the wick from one to the other. Anyway, Tosfos learns that the wick remained in the lamp, and what it means, means that they would finish the last thing he would do is clean out that one and relight it. Anyway, the point is, the Gemara says, so on the face of it, you see, you could light one lamp from another, so what is, so how does that work according to the opinions that you can't? And the Gemara goes on to continue discussing that. Then the Gemara continues. It mentions the point that you can use any kind of oil or any kind of wick for Neiros Chanukah, unlike Neiros Shabbos, which is the subject of the Perek, where you can only use certain kinds. So Amar Rabbi Shimon Levi. So in this connection, the Gemara mentions, by the way, another point about different kinds of oils. Amar Rabbi Shimon Levi, Kol Hashmanim Yochim Nidyoi. All kinds of oil are good for ink. The Shemen Zayis Min Amukho, but olive oil was the best of all of them. So the question became, Legabel Ola Ashen. What do we mean that olive oil was the best? Now, when you make the recipe for making ink, the way we make ink nowadays, the way that Sofer make ink nowadays is very different than the kind that they made in the time of the Gemara, but the recipe of the kind they made in the time of the Gemara, the Rambam brings it in Hilchos Tefillin, the gist of it is you'd use soot. You'd mix together soot from a burning lamp or whatever, together with oil and together with a couple of other ingredients, and you'd make of it a very, very dark black substance. One difference between that and the ink that's used nowadays is that it was erasable. The Gemara in some places discusses that ink for Sefer Torah, Tefillah, Mezuzah, Saka is supposed to be erasable. By the Parsha Sota, for sure you have to have that. And by other things, it was Lamaisa. Ink nowadays is made considerably differently. Anyway, so now when we say that olive oil is the best, there are a couple of different blends of ink. You go to a sofer, you ask your local sofer, he'll tell you there are a couple of different formulations of ink that they use nowadays, but the standard kind is one that in fact is not erasable. If the sofer makes a mistake, the only thing you can do is wait till it dries and scrape it away. The kind of ink that's described over here in the Gemara, and that the Rambam brings in Hilchos Sefer Torah, was taka erasable, it was basically a base of oil with soot mixed in, and therefore it was very easily erasable, even when it was wet. Anyway, so the gabel or the ashen, when we say that olive oil is the best, do we mean as far as kneading, or do we mean as far as making the smoke, making the soot? In other words, what is it? Is it that the best kind of soot you'll get from burning olive oil, and then you scrape it off the container that it was burning in, and that's the best kind of soot? Or do we mean any kind of soot is fine? Afterwards, the best kind of oil to mix it with, to be a base for the ink, is olive oil. The Gemara says, Toshma, the Tanya of Shmuel bar Zitra, Kol Hashmanim Yotam L'Diyoy, V'Shem L'Zayis Min Amukha, Bein L'Gabel, Bein L'Ashen. Whether as far as kneading or whether as far as smoking. So yes, the best kind of soot is from olive oil, and the best kind to knead it with is also olive oil. Abayna at the bottom of the page points out over here that, and after all, we want to have Shemen Zayis is the best as far as burning in the menorah and as far as other Neiros Shel Mitzvah, the same way, it's the best thing for enlightening the eyes of the Jewish people with the light of Torah, and therefore that's why the Gemara is saying that olive oil is the best. The Shemen Zayis Menamotah. Rav Shmuel bar Zutra Masni Lahachi. Rav Shmuel bar Zutra learned it a little differently. Kol Hashmanim or Hashanim Yochim Udiyoy, all kinds of oils, or the other gears, so all kinds of smoke, all kinds of soot, are good for ink. Hashem Zayis Menambo. For an olive oil is the best thing. Amar Rav Huna, so in this connection, Rav Huna mentions, Kol Asrofim Yochim Udiyoy, all kinds of srofim are good for ink. Then we got, the Lagabo means to mix, and Lashim means to make the soot. So Lagabo would be the base of the ink, the liquid that the soot is going to be suspended in olive oil is the best, and the actual soot itself, the best kind, is produced by burning olive oil. So Amar Rav Huna, Rav Huna mentions in this connection, all kinds of srach are good for ink. The srach ktaf, yochmi kulam, and the srach of ktaf is best of all of them. Rashi explains that srach means gum from certain kinds of trees, and ktaf, Rashi translates with a French word that means a type of small berry. It's called in English a slow berry or blackthorn or something like that. Tosfos disagrees and says that you don't actually use gum in ink. We find from various other Gemaras that dafka ink does not include gum, and therefore they understand that srach is more like a sap from the tree rather than a gum from the tree. The present day, the kind of ink they use nowadays, taka does include gum as one of the ingredients. But the type of ink that we're talking about over here in the Gemara, lav dafka. I think the Rambam also holds, I think, like Rashi, and then says that you use gum. Because the point is, it gives the ink a little body. It makes it, it's not quite so thin, not quite so runny, so it has a little body, and it actually makes good, long-lasting letters. As far as a halacha, I understand that we've been learning the last few days minhage Purim. What else is there to add about halachas and minhage Purim? That's not really well known. I guess one thing is, I guess let's how much do you have to drink? So when you have the Rambam holds, you drink a little more than your regilus, and then you go to sleep. So Hastas, if you're regilus like mine is to drink next to nothing, then you drink a drop and you yikes. You're gonna go all do with the Rambam. If you go to sleep, the Rambam holds. That's Abdullah Yoda when you're asleep, you don't have to. What? No, so the Rebbe explains that he brought him up to a higher Ruchniistic level.
He didn't kill him.
He didn't kill him, right. I mean, it is in the Shrumble left his body, so in that sense, it's killing him, but it's not. Yeah. Okay, Yom Yom Mashiach HaGola, real quick. Tainus Esther is different than other times. Okay. Guys, let's split. Guys. Yeah, okay. Tanis Esther that Rebbe talked about is different from other Tanisim because it's a Yom Miyuchad B'fnei Atzma. The four Tanis of Asar HaBetavis and Shivas HaBetamos and Tisha B'Av and Sum Gedalia have to do with a chain of events that happen one after the other in connection with the Churban of the Beis Mikdash and the Golus. So when we talk about those Tanisim become a Yom Yotzen, means that the Beis Mikdash will be built and there will be the Golas City. Tanis Esther, on the other hand, is an event of its own that has nothing to do directly with the Beis Mikdash. But we're standing on a day when we have the Golu, the idea is a Tainus Esther. So therefore, the Rebbe says, Adrabba, we can say that we have a greater advantage on this day relative to the other Tanesim, namely the Hizgalus, Rotzin Elion, Borofu, the Yom Rotzin Lashem on Tainus Esther, is so high that relative to that Golu, there's no difference between a massive of Golus and a massive of Golu. That's the level of Tainus Esther. The Rebbe's Kiddush, in other words, is that Tainus Esther doesn't directly have to do with Golus and Golu. It has to do... Well, there is that point, right, that Eber talks about, that only Esther fasted because everybody else was going to war, yeah, right. But here, the point is, in other words, that we're saying that it's a Yom Ratzin of a different kind, where there's no difference between Golos and Gaula. The Yom Ratzin of Tainus Esther is the same in Golos as it will be in Gaula. Yeah.